So for those of you following along, I guess we're at paper eight. Is that correct, Liz?
Yep.
Okay, take it away.
Okay. So agenda paper eight. Last July, you discussed how an issuer should account for a particular early settlement option under IS 32. So the financial instrument described in the submission was mandatorily convertible into a variable number of the issuer's own shares, subject to a cap and a floor, but gave the issuer the right to settle the instrument at any point before maturity by delivering the maximum number of shares. If the issuer chose to settle early, it also had to pay all of the interest that would have been payable if the instrument had remained outstanding until its maturity. Given those terms of the early settlement option, essentially the question was whether that option was substantive and should be included in the instrument's classification assessment. In July, you tentatively decided not to add this issue to your agenda and published a tentative agenda decision, which stated that if a contractual term lacks substance, then it would be excluded from the classification assessment. You also noted that judgment would be required to make that determination, and that the issuer would need to understand whether there are any actual economic or business reasons that it would exercise the option. Agenda paper 8 summarizes the comments that we received. As described in more detail in the paper, most respondents agreed with the committee's decision not to add this issue to its agenda and generally agreed with the principle articulated in the tentative agenda decision, but they had concerns about some of the wording. After considering the comments received, we recommend that the committee finalize its decision not to add this issue to its agenda, and we've proposed wording that takes into account the feedback that we've received. So the question for you today is whether you agree with our recommendation to finalize the tentative decision not to add this issue to your agenda, and if so, do you have any comments on the proposed wording in Appendix A?
Comments? Laurence?
I understand and I agree with the outcome for the case presented. I'm questioning whether some of the wording might not have an intended consequences, particularly when you look at the paragraph you have added on page 18, the second paragraph, and sentence number two, which states that, however, the interpretation committee noted that having a choice between delivering cash or shares is different from having a choice between delivering a variable number of shares and a fixed number of shares. This is not explained. And also the second sentence that says, in the particular case, you cannot just be satisfied by looking at paragraph 20B of IS 32. You need to look further. And the question is, by stating so, does that mean that for any other types of contract, this is the approach that you must have? For instance, reverse convertible bonds have always been analyzed looking solely to paragraph 20B, assessing whether paragraph 20B applies. And here, are we saying that even for reverse convertible bonds, you must look beyond and must identify the substance and why those instruments have been issued and so on and so on and so on? So I'm not disagreeing where we land on this issue. I'm just questioning whether with what is written, this is not going to open doors to the analysis that has been done so far to some instruments, which analysis we didn't want to affect.
To help the ignorance of your chairman, can you explain to us what a reverse convertible bond is?
A reverse convertible bond is when it is at the issuer's choice to settle in cash or in shares.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't.
But again, so you would have. So you look, as long as you are not in paragraph 20B, you conclude that it is an equity instrument because you have the ability to just settle in shares. But now, if you are pushed to look at that, and in addition to assess what's behind, why you made it issue and offer cash or shares, that's...
I was just unfamiliar with the nomenclature.
What we call in the U.S. share settleable debt, I think.
Yeah, that's what I would have called it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Scott.
I had comments on that same paragraph that was added, perhaps a little different turn on it. The situation addressed in 20B is you can settle it in cash or a fixed number of shares, the fixed number of shares being more. And 20B seems to, I think, say, ignore the share settlement option, it's a liability. We then go on, we make reference to that, and then we say, however, we noted that having a choice between cash and shares is different than having a choice between shares and shares. Well, I agree that's true. But if you just focus on that difference, the fixed number of shares settlement option in the instrument in this issue is less likely to be substantive. Because at least in 20B, you have a liquidity reason perhaps to settle in shares. Nonetheless, 20B says it's a liability.
But only if it substantially exceeds.
Yes, only if it substantially exceeds. That's right. So I agree it's not the same as what's in 20B, but the difference we have focused on doesn't seem to be the one that would actually make it less likely for the fixed share settlement option to be, to be substantive. It's one that would make it more likely to be non-substantive. So I would have focused on the difference being that in 20B, it is stated that the value of the share settlement substantially exceeds the cash settlement, while in the current issue, it may not always be the case that the value of the fixed share settlement substantially exceeds the value of the variable share, and therefore, you got to do more analysis, consider how big the difference is, et cetera. I hadn't focused on the possibility that we might write this in a way that opens the door on the instruments that are directly addressed by 20B. I hope we don't do that.
Liz, did you want to respond to that, or should we go on?
I suppose my only response is, Scott, we were trying to do exactly, my view is consistent with yours.
Okay.
I actually think that when you're comparing cash to shares, substantially exceeds makes sense. When you're looking at shares versus shares, I don't think the threshold needs to be as high. Because I don't think the rationale that underpins 20B in the circumstances it's written for necessarily applies to the circumstances we're looking at here.
Right.
So what I was attempting to do actually is to reflect what you said. I mean, I think the reason I didn't add more language was because in July, it seemed that some committee members preferred to say less instead of more.
Well, and I just thought that as written, you know, it seemed to say you would be less likely to disregard the fixed share option in this instrument than you would in the 20B instrument, and I think it's probably the other way around. You know, that part of my read of that is in the paragraph that starts specifically, the long paragraph that goes over two pages, the example is the current share price would equate to the delivery of a number of shares that is close to the floor. You know, that seems to say that when there's a really big difference, you're going to disregard the fixed share option. But, you know, by focusing on close to the floor, I thought we were kind of limiting the number of times that you'd get liability treatment.
Okay. I understand.
Philippe, board member privilege.
This discussion about the economic reasons, business reasons, rational behavior of the issuer of the instruments reminds me of a discussion about the step-up dividend and economic compulsion that this committee had a couple of years ago. And since that the committee concluded that you don't, in determining whether the instrument is liability or equity, you don't analyze the rational economic behavior or the economic compulsion or whatever, Here it seems that the last part of this agenda, this rejection, seems to base the analysis on, is there any actual economic or other business reasons why you would exercise the option? And in contrast to the decision you made on the economic compulsion for step-up instruments, I'm not sure the philosophy is very consistent. Can you explain to me?
Sure. So I actually view the issue of substance, which is discussed here, as being different from economic compulsion. And I think it has to do with whether the term you're talking about is contractual or not. So when the board and at the time the IFRIC talked about economic compulsion, they were talking about whether something that was non-contractual could be inserted into the contract. So they were talking about discretionary dividends, whether you could insert it into a contract and make it contractual. What we're talking about here, in contrast, is taking a look at something that's in the contract. It's a contractual term, and trying to figure out whether that contractual term should affect classification.
I'm discussing another, I think, something a bit different. It was when an instrument was either redeemable in cash or not redeemed, but then the remuneration, the dividend, would increase, and that is contractual.
The contract. Redemption is not contractual.
Yeah.
So that instrument, the redemption was at the option of the issuer. So the interest stepped up, and that was contractual. But redemption was at the option of the issuer.
Yes.
And the board was discussing whether the issuer's discretion to redeem should be treated as if it were mandatory. And the board said no.
It was, in my opinion, based on the fact that a rational issuer would redeem instead of paying the ever increasing dividend. And that was an economic analysis of what a normal business person would do. And here, I don't see any difference because you say whether the option is substantive or not, it depends really on the analysis of the rational economic behavior. So it seems to me very similar, but I thought,
though, just to clarify, Liz, correct my recollection. The board said in 32, I thought, that as long as the option to redeem was at the issuer, the fact that it might hurt a lot for them not to redeem was not a reason to change the classification. So economic compulsion was not determinative then.
Right. And if I remember sort of what I'm trying to, because it was in a footnote in the paper in July, so I've recently looked at the actual words, and Wayne, I think you're exactly right. What the board said was you have to look at the substance of the contract. You have to look at the substance of all contractual terms. But what you can't do is take something that's not contractual and impute it.
Yeah. Okay, let's just go around the table since I haven't kept track. So, Tony, you're next.
I'm comfortable with the conclusion that we reached before and the direction the staff has taken. I think I shared some of the concerns that Laurence and Scott had about that paragraph as to whether people would necessarily understand exactly what it was getting at. So, and just at a very basic level, without talking about specific instruments, where the sentence that says, however, noted that having a choice, etc., is not the same, whether people would understand why. I think we probably all understand why, but it would help people to understand it and interpret it if you just explained why you said that. And I think it probably gets to the same points that Laurence and Scott were making. But otherwise, I was comfortable with where you'd got to. And I do, to maybe respond to Philippe's point, I do think this is different from economic compulsion. This is trying to determine whether the term in the agreement itself has substance, rather than whether there's any particular compulsion to do anything.
Martin?
I support the wording.
Oops, I'm sorry, Charlotte, I skipped you, but go ahead, Martin.
Okay, I support the wording, however, I would delete that sentence with however. Up to the point, therefore, and then start, I mean, excluded from the classification assessment, the interpretation committee noted that it would not be appropriate for the issuer and so on. So I believe this then will be clear. That would be my suggestion.
Okay, so you delete from the word however to the comma after therefore.
Yeah.
Essentially right. Take that. Okay. Charlotte, I'm sorry, I skipped over you.
Yeah, I suppose I share some of the concerns. I don't think it's that far from economic compulsion, especially when all the factors that you've sort of included are really economic and pricing ones, rather than other factors that could drive, you know, legal situations, regulatory situations, which could leave someone wanting to exercise an option early. So it just reads that if you just look at the economic likelihood of doing that, which I don't think would necessarily be the case. So I'd sort of rather, I think I'm a less is more person on this.
Andrew?
Yes, like others, I support the staff conclusion and the recommendation that we finalise the agenda decision. I think this instrument should be classified as liability, and ignoring the early settlement feature because it's non-substantive is the way to get there. The paragraph that references 20B, I share Scott's view that we should perhaps give a bit more flavour as to how that differs from the particular example in 20B. I think the example, stepping back from that though, 20B is relevant because it is an application of substance, but it doesn't define substance. Mm-hmm. That's how I'd see the linkage here. Economic compulsion. Here we're talking about whether a contractual feature should be included or excluded from the determination. Economic compulsion is a different set of criteria, and economic compulsion can be substantive, but they're just not part of the classification.
Yep.
So I think that's the distinction we're making, and that's how IS 32 works, like it or not. My final comment was, and one or two of the comment letters talked about the reference to pricing and how that links in to the overall argument here. The overall argument is saying really what we're looking at is whether there are actual economic or other business reasons why the issuer in this case would exercise the option. And then it says, for example, the issuer would consider pricing, as though pricing was sort of one of the reasons. I'm not sure pricing is one of the reasons why you might exercise the option. Possibly it's probably just drafting, but is a further indicator of substance. And I wouldn't want to give the impression it's an all or nothing assessment. I think you could get to a situation where an option has some effect on pricing, but it is still not substantive because it's very remote. So the impact on pricing is very small.
Yeah, let's go John and Reinhardt, and then I'll go to the phones.
I have some difficulties with the paragraph that refers to 20B, because I really struggle as to how I would apply 20B to this particular instrument. 20B deals with when a term might, or an option may not have substance, but it's actually fundamentally a different option. And I think the last sentence in 20B, which isn't addressed in the agenda decision, is potentially problematic, because it says, in any event, the holder has in substance been guaranteed receipt of an amount that is at least equal to the cash settlement option. But in this case, the holder is guaranteed an amount that's at least equal to the best outcome they can get upon maturity, which is the maximum number of shares. So you could read, if 20B was applied to this, that they're always guaranteed the maximum number of shares, and therefore any of those options lack substance. And I don't think that's... So to me, I struggle with how... I actually think less is more in respect to 20B, because I don't think 20B can actually be applied to the instrument we're talking about. All that 20B does is tell you that, yes, a contractual term can be ignored because it may lack substance.
Reinhardt?
I overall support the direction the staff is going in the wording of the draft agenda decision. I had similar comments on the paragraph that we talked about, which I won't repeat, but what I was probably more concerned about was whether by putting in examples and the way the last paragraph is worded, in effect, opens the door for a issuer to claim substance. Because in my mind, here in this case, following along the lines of what John said, that last sentence in paragraph 20B, here the holder is guaranteed a variable number of shares. And to me, that option has substance if it substantively negates getting a variable number of shares. As I say, I just was concerned reading the examples where we've got a wide range between the cap and floor, that it seems to open the door to claiming substance in more circumstances than perhaps, at least I thought, had envisaged it being applicable.
Would you repeat the language you just used about substantively negates?
So substantively negates getting a variable number of shares. I mean,
I thought, Liz, correct me if I'm wrong, that's kind of what you're driving at, isn't it? She's busy writing.
Okay. Let me think. So that would say that the terms of the early settlement option, whether they substantially negate, whether the early settlement option, which is fixed for fixed, whether that substantially negates the obligation to deliver variable.
Right.
I think the only reason I struggle a bit with that, and maybe it's just drafting, is there is no obligation to deliver variable. So it's not substantially negating. So right now, so contractually, you have a choice. So you have an obligation to settle it, but you have a choice whether you do it in fixed and variable. So I'm not sure. I'm just a bit perplexed by saying that there's an obligation to deliver variable. Because I think the only time that there's an obligation to deliver variable is if you ignore the fix for fixed.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost right. Like the variable is negating the fix for fixed, not the other way around.
But the concern then would be that that would imply the fix for fixed is the substantive. That's the driving feature, right? So I was looking at it the other way around, where you essentially as a holder guaranteed a variable number of shares, but the issuer has this option to give you fixed for fixed, and it's essentially that's got to overcome the variability. So I was starting with, why is this a liability in the first place? It's because because of the variability in the number of shares. As I say, my concern with going the other way around is it's fixed for fixed, but you have the ability to overcome that by giving variable. That's to me, would suggest someone could say the primary feature is the fixed for fixed element. So, as I say, I had some concern about the wording here opening the door to claiming substance in more cases than perhaps we envisage. And maybe those words I gave weren't quite right, but that's my point.
Okay. Let's go to the phones. Luca, did you want to get in?
No, I have no specific comment. I think that the voting that we are creating now is in any case better than before, better explaining the rationale of.
Do you want to try that again, Luca? You're breaking up in the transmission here somehow.
He's in the fish tank. So.
Luca, can you try and give us your view again? I think a lot of us didn't understand what you were saying. It's the connection.
Oh, okay. I have no specific comments on this part. I think that the wording presented by staff is better than before, and that better fixing than what we have decided in our previous decision.
Okay. When you do talk, you need to lean right into the mic there. Sandy, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No.
Shelley?
Nope.
Okay. My sense is that the suggestions for wording changes are all going in the same direction.
I don't know. So I heard some folks saying, so where I talk about 20B, I got a bit of mixed messages. So it sounded like some people wanted me to put more words in about why 20B is different from the scenario that we're talking about here, whereas other people were saying less is more.
My sense was that the predominant view was less is more. Is there anybody who thinks we need to say more about 20B?
My sense would be if we leave it, we might need to say some more to clarify what it means. But if it were to come out altogether, I don't think that would, certainly wouldn't cause me a problem.
Yeah, but then you have people.
Then you have people questioning why
why 20B does not play a role here? Because you have a settlement in shares, and if the value exceeds significantly the amount of cash, don't you have a liability? So
I like the reference.
Cannot 20B. Be ignored. But
Scott.
I like the reference to 20B because it gives an example of where you ignore a contractual ability to settle in a fixed number of shares. So, you know, I think the reference is good because it sort of sets forth that this principle of disregarding a contractual ability to settle a fixed number of shares, it's already in the literature. But, you know, other than referring to it because it sets forth that principle or precedent, I don't know that we need to say a whole lot more about how. If we do, I would say different things than we say now.
So if I, sorry, Wayne.
No, please, you're ahead of me on points. So
if I, for example, kept the first sentence of the paragraph that's all, the first paragraph that's all in underline, if I keep the first sentence that the committee noted that the guidance is relevant because it looks at instruments with two settlement options, I could either end the paragraph there, or as one of the committee members, I could keep that sentence, delete the sentence that says however, and keep the sentence that says therefore.
But I think I'm not sure that the committee was saying that, because therefore I don't think we were concerned that if you just apply 20B in exactly the same way, it's not what we really mean. So I wonder whether distilling it back down based on your first sentence and sort of making the observation 20B is relevant because it describes a situation where there's choices of settlement and shows that sometimes you should disregard one.
Yep.
Maybe just cutting it down to that concept. Yeah.
So just the first sentence. Yeah. So the point in the first sentence.
Needs a little bit of rewording, but essentially.
Oh, I'm seeing head nods around the room in support of that. Andrew, did you want to come in on something?
I think it's important to retain some reference, because when I've been involved in discussions of this instrument, then the relevance of 20B has been questioned, and people have started asking, can they make an argument that you do include this feature because the number of shares you might have to settle isn't substantially more than the top end of the range of the variable number of shares. So I think to acknowledge it's an example of the use of substance, but not directly analogous to this instrument, or doesn't define substance, as I put it earlier, should be enough.
General support for that? Lawrence, you're sullen but not mutinous, is that what?
I'm happy. I would just like the staff to look at what is written to ensure that if you think of the reasoning that is applied to reverse convertible, with the wording that you'll get, this is not going to affect the wording that we have for reverse convertible.
Okay.
Where for reverse convertible classification, we only rely on 20B.
Okay.
That's my only concern.
And I do think it's because what we're trying to do is to say share is different from share cash. So I think that's consistent with what you're saying, because you're saying a reverse convertible is share cash, and we're talking about share.
But the other thing that's different is that in the example, the value of the shares always substantially exceeds the value of the cash, whereas in this issue, doesn't always exceed. Depends on what the share price does.
But I wasn't sure, just so we understand. Sorry, I shouldn't be talking so much, but But do you want us to start talking about share versus share cash in the actual final version of this, or rather do you want us to cut it down to saying 20B is relevant because it talks about circumstances where there's settlement choices and shows that in some circumstances you should disregard?
I'd leave it there.
And leave it there.
Yeah.
That, I think, would then be okay for your perspective.
And I suppose just to confirm one other thing, I heard, I suppose, one committee member talk about the sentence that I've amended after 20B, but it seems sort of the consensus is that paragraph is helpful.
I didn't hear any comments on it. So.
Okay.
Okay.